Hey, everybody, welcome to This Life Podcast with me, Dr. Drew. And, of course, it's not only me today. It's the great Bob Forrest. Bob Forrest in the hizzy.
Hard for me not to yell at the beginning.
Indeed. Bit of business to take care of before, Bob, before we get into this. Today's sponsor is Social CBD. We're proud of our sponsors. We appreciate you guys supporting them. Social CBD, I'll tell you more about them at the break. And we want to get some callers on the line, so you can call us at 984-2-DR-DREW. Where the number is 984-237-3739. Find on the banner at Facebook or Twitter. We are live on the YouTube channel, facebook.com, Dr. Drew, as well, and on Mixer. So this is new technology for everyone today. We appreciate you being here with us. If you texted us a question, you received a text notification on your phone, call us and get in the queue first. If you got that text message, you're first up. You'll hear us while on the line, and we'll be getting to you in just a few moments. And
This is nuts. Yeah, it's like crazy, a TV studio in your house.
It is. I actually did a satellite broadcast out of here. They put a landscape in the back.
Oh, man.
And, brighter than TV. Instead of a satellite now, they can plug into your Ethernet.
Oh, really?
And that's it. It's a television studio. It's crazy. Beyond crazy. So,
who set all this up? Susan?
Susan and Caleb behind the camera.
That must have been a fun week.
Yeah, it was more than a week, I'm afraid. It's been about 3 months getting this together.
And it's a TV studio.
As you see, there were still some bugs to work out. We're 7 minutes late getting on the air here. So, Bob, I feel like the world has changed since you and I were last together.
I retired.
Seriously? Have you?
Well, semi-retired.
That's good.
Yeah.
You got tired of trying to drag people into recovery?
Yeah. Well, I got tired. I'm a dinosaur is what I realized. And yeah. I think you've come to grips with that.
You're
less accepting of it than I am.
Well, but wait a minute. We're dinosaurs, but we have something to offer.
Dinosaurs compared to addiction philosophy the 21st century.
Yes.
And not only that, but I don't think a lot of my ideas have changed in the last year, say. I just kept thinking, well, if I can break through to these millennials, they'll realize what we're talking about.
No, they won't. Yeah.
So somebody of that mindset needs to deal with them on an hour by hour, day by day, group way.
How would you characterize that mindset?
The mindset is, well, I've talked to Khalil about it a lot, our friend from Sun Life Organics. They just don't think in terms of hierarchy like we do. Respect their elders.
That's true.
So why would they care about what people have traditionally respected for 100 years?
Right.
Because they don't respect things. That kind of stuff.
I'm not sure respect is the right word, but they don't...
It doesn't cooperate.
They don't value. They don't.
Whatever you want to call it. Well, that's why I retired.
they sort of don't perceive hierarchy, right?
It's not that I'm giving up. I'm just more focused on a part of the addiction puzzle that nobody's focused on, which is Narcan.
Saving lives.
Yeah, saving lives on the ground floor so they can live long enough to come up with whatever solution
they find. I don't have it in my pocket now, but I normally carry Narcan around with me.
Yeah, I have it in my car.
I keep it everywhere.
I had a funny thing. So I was driving in, not in downtown where you like, but down just west of downtown.
Yeah.
Right? And then I'm at a light, and it's late at night. It's like 1 o'clock. I was coming home from a concert, and the guy was like, he looked dead.
Yeah.
So I pulled over, I got my Narcan out of the thing, I was walking up to him, and then I was standing over him, and he looked up at me, and opened his eyes, and he said, what the fuck, you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, sorry, and I had the thing, and he goes, and he started laughing, because he knew it was Narcan.
Why is it funny?
And he goes, no, I'm just sleeping. So at my event that's coming up next month, we're going to have shirts that say, don't Narcan me, I'm only napping.
Narcan, just napping.
But it's an energetic grassroots thing to try to get Narcan out in the hands of every addict in Los Angeles County, in every public building, right next to the fire extinguishers. This is exciting to me. It reinvigorated me because I was doing groups with kids, and they just don't even know what I'm talking about,
right,
Drew.
So I want to bring in Bruce Heischober.
I was talking to Bruce about this a couple months ago.
Oh, good. So, hey, Bruce. Bruce?
Yes, sir.
Hey, there man, he
how
is.
Are you? So Bruce is an ER doctor. He's an addictionologist. He and I have worked together for decades now. And Bob was just, did you hear what Bob was saying about the hierarchies and younger patients?
No, you know, I couldn't. I was just on hold. I couldn't hear anything.
So the idea, I've been doing groups for 23 years, and I just about 4 months ago retired from running groups because I wasn't connecting, and the clients weren't really necessarily connecting with me. And just because I've been doing it for 23 years doesn't mean that I'm doing it well in the modern treatment context. You understand? If I'm not inspiring and I'm not connecting, and I'm just an old man saying a bunch of old stuff that they don't want to hear, I thought my energy could be used better to get more on the streets and back to the addicts who are using. And so that's why I've been doing Narcan stuff and stuff like that, and just right on the streets and needle exchange, stuff like that. And it's exciting. I'm reinvigorated. But it was mostly about how I was saying this generation and our society in general don't respect tradition. And this goes from soup to nuts, from government right now. You know, the leader of the free world doesn't respect the Constitution.
But you said hierarchies, though, which I think is true.
It's something doctors, they don't respect at all.
I know. So hierarchies don't really exist.
Do you find that, Bruce, that they're not respecting you like they did 20 years ago in the emergency room? I use the word respect.
Yeah, so there's emergency room where you have the untreated, in the disease, addict, alcoholic, and then there's in the addiction clinic where I work, where I found that such a huge motivational interviewing is a connecting with the other person on a very basic, very human level. And that's sort of what I tended to do just intuitively. So, but you're right. In the emergency department, I find less respect, especially I'm older than you, and I don't have a recovery path, so I can't connect on that level. But, and I'm also, you know, there are a lot of things I'd love to talk about, but seeing people come in that are overdoses, getting hold of a Xanax that has fentanyl in it, not somebody that's just buying one Norco and not an addict and overdosing. So those, just to, not to be off on a tangent, but, you know, that's the two spheres I'm in. In the emergency department, it's definitely a different type of interaction with the patient. I'm sure that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a disconnect. I was always able to connect. And one of the things, and there's a hopelessness in young people that they don't ever think anything's going to get better. And they don't think that they're going to be able to get off of drugs and get a job and turn their lives around. And part of that is this strange puzzle where they don't really respect the people that have done that. So, I mean,
right. If you don't trust that
I was homeless, that I was just like you, that I somehow followed some simple directions and my life became what my life is, that used to bring hope to addicts. It does not bring hope to addicts anymore. And I don't know what we're going to do, but I'm just mostly focusing on them surviving these next 2 to 5 years, just on the streets, really. You know, and the other thing is,
what do you think of that, Drew?
We're in survival mode. We're not in thriving mode.
I think Bob is right. It's why I've softened my position on Suboxone. I was always accepting of the fact that there were a population that got benefited from Suboxone, but the population of drug addicts now are so low functioning and so massive that I think replacement therapies may be our only option in terms of saving lives. And you sent me some data. You sent some interesting stuff to me today, Bruce, by text, about Suboxone being used as first-line treatment in pain management, too.
Yeah, I've suggested it to a couple people.
I've suggested it to the populations in pain management. We did a pain management episode on this show, and we have been attacked every day since, as though I were somehow promoting Suboxone, working for Beckett Reckheiser, whatever the name of the company is. I have zero relationship with Suboxone. I have not been an advocate for it ever. But the consensus papers on pain management are advising doctors to use it as a first-line drug. Is that not true, Bruce?
Yes.
Yeah,
and
true.
I can tell you, for the patient that cannot taper off, somebody that has chronic terminal pain, not terminal cancer, but no expectation of improvement in the pain situation, it is different than other opiates. You know, the way it binds to the mu receptor, the lack of and the blocking of the kappa receptor, yeah, and probably some NMDA effect.
Well, I'm being more practical totally than you guys. Hold on, though. Doctors will prescribe Suboxone, and they won't prescribe OxyContin. I just had a friend in Cedars-Sinai in the worst pain. He had pneumonia, and he had just had throat cancer, and he's getting 5 milligrams OxyContin. And I said to the nurse, you used to give 10 times that to kids who broke their wrist for football.
That's right. 5 years ago. not in the ancient past.
Yeah.
5 years ago.
And so when I deal with pain management people through the interweb, you know, where they contact me and say, well, you know, what are some of the things? My doctor's cut me off. They've labeled me a bad patient.
Yeah, bad.
I say, well, go to a Suboxone doctor. And I'm telling you, you're going 32 milligrams of Suboxone. That's got to cut through some pain.
Well, I said, that's why I brought it up talking to pain people. It's like the government is pushing it. They're restricting your access to the mu opioids. They're pushing the Suboxone.
So why doesn't pain management clinics use it?
They, Bruce?
Bruce.
Oh, we lost Bruce. Did we lose Bruce?
I don't know.
Recording is on.
Uh-oh, we lost Bruce.
And the relapse.
Well, oh, there he was.
We lost you, Bruce.
Okay,
go ahead,
we lost you for a second. So why does the pain clinics not use Suboxone? Bruce?
I just had a discussion with a psychiatrist this morning for an hour. There is a bias, and part of it, we felt, comes from the addiction treatment field. There is a stigma around Suboxone, which extends to buprenorphine, which has been around since 1980 for pain. It is a superior medication for pain if someone needs it. Right now, I'm working with a system where we have a list of people that are on high doses of opiates, and it's very difficult to taper them for whatever reason. And there's a study out of University of Michigan saying if you have patients that are on high doses of opiates and you're having a difficult time tapering, then put them inpatient and get them immediately over to buprenorphine. So,
and by the way, have you ever been a Bruce, have you ever met a buprenorphine addict?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to introduce you to another one. Sitting across from here, Bob Forrest was strung out of buprenorphine. So
I used to love that stuff. I don't know if you ever heard of a Dr. Howard Mark, his name was. He was the first buprenorphine advocate in Los Angeles in the early 80s, mid-80s. And he used to prescribe it to all musicians, right? It was illegal, and we'd go by his clinic, and you'd get these little ampules of it, 10 milligrams, right?
Crazy.
And I was taking it from probably all my friends and everyone I know, and Steven Adler, all the
But the point is,
Rose guys,
if it's carefully
from
managed,
86 to like 95, we all had buprenorphine in our backpacks or in our cars or at home, hundreds of doses of it.
Right.
And
if
it worked.
If you're shooting up, for example, in Finland, 90% of opiate abuse is buprenorphine, and that's because of its availability and it's cheap there. It's another opiate.
Right.
And 1-2% of patients in the literature, when I ask patients the effect it has, they describe energy and euphoria. 1-2% get energy and euphoria from buprenorphine. I stop it immediately, and I tell patients, they say, what are the contraindications to me taking this? How is it going to affect my recovery? I say, unless you're allergic, or if you get euphoria, and that's a genetic, that's a physiologic thing. 1-2% of the population that are not allergic, but they will tell you, I'm getting energy. It's just like, oh, it's great stuff.
Well, I didn't get that, but I definitely was not sick. I was definitely not sick.
Yeah, but you could shoot up Benadryl.
Let's not
shoot up Benadryl and get high.
Well, let's not encourage people, Bruce.
No,
let's not go too far down the rabbit hole, guys. Let's just go back to the fact that full recovery is a difficult thing for people to achieve these days. Something scalable, something safe, it seems like more what we need. And Suboxone sort of fits that bill right now, right?
I think it really does.
Drew, I agree with Drew, you are, and Bob, you guys are always very hesitant to recommend Suboxone. And
yes,
I think you take a combination of, I was sort of pushing it, you guys were saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I think what I'm seeing now, so many people are getting these X-waivers, they're getting waivers to prescribe this to addicts. You have to have a comprehensive program. You have to hold people to be
Well, that's the other problem. That is the other program.
Or you're right.
Yeah, that is the other issue, right. Is that doctors are being urged to take on 250 patients. I know what I'm doing, but guys. I could handle maybe 30 unless I had a huge team of people around me.
Yeah, I have to have a team, an outpatient program.
Oh, my God, a whole bunch of people. But anyway, we've gone way down the rabbit hole. Bruce,
right.
It's good to talk to you. I just want to get your thoughts on this quickly. Go ahead. Last thoughts.
Well, let me just say, we also have a Medi-Cal IEHP grant. If you're out in Riverside, 951-275-8500, and it's for MAT, medication-assisted treatment. It's covered by Medi-Cal IEHP. So it's 951-275-8500. An extension 130, but if
wait,
you just
whoa,
call
whoa,
that number,
Bruce, right, say it again. Say it again. I'll write it down.
Yeah.
Say it again.
951.
Yep.
MAT, medication-assisted treatment, is covered by IEHP, which is a Medi-Cal provider, and we have a full team approach. We have therapists, we have providers, and it's 951-275-8500, extension 130.
That's the new
psychiatric medical group. We can also take other.
All right, man. Hmm? We're gonna leave it there.
We got it. But that's the new. I talked to Drew about it. So that's the new state of California grants that have
thanks,
gone to.
Thanks, Bruce. I'll talk to you soon. We got more to talk about offline. Okay.
But this is important.
Okay.
All right, man.
So these grants have been given Are you ready, Drew? Tarzana Treatment Center, Clara Foundation, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, Bruce has got one.
What you don't know is I've been working with the current administration in Washington to try to get them to get rid of that IMD exclusion so we can start releasing Medicaid funds for chronic mentally ill and drug addicts.
Well, but I'm talking about what's coming in California on January 1. You want to know?
Go ahead.
Medi-Cal will not compensate programs that don't offer MAT.
Okay.
That is going to mean CryHelp, Impact, Redgate, American Hospital will have to provide an MAT track, or they won't get paid at all for the absence-based treatment.
Wow!
So that's a rough interesting. One. That's why you have to pay attention in your politics.
It's why government is always
somebody got to Gavin Newsom and said, "Hey, this is the greatest thing ever."
Guess who?
The Suboxone company.
Right. So it's a problem with government. It goes all one way or all the other. And we've now gone from overprescribing of opiates to underprescribing of opiates where people with real pain can't get
it. I saw it a week ago. It was horrible.
All right. Let's get, let me see. How do I get Dave on here? Dave?
Dopey Dave?
Yeah.
There
hey, buddy.
He is. So disappointed from
long
his failure to interview Flea.
So hold on. Let me read. Dave, I got to read.
Oh, fuck you, Bob. Jesus Christ.
No, hey. I'm telling you, you can't expect him to do it that day.
Hold
He's going to call you and do one.
Okay, here's Dave. Dave, I got to read your particulars. May I?
Oh, this.
Everybody knows Dave.
Oh, please.
Dopey is a shame and guilt-free space that promotes sharing without judgment where every debaucherous detail is encouraged. Nothing is off limit. This is on the podcast, right?
Dopey.
The only requirement for guests and listeners, brutal honesty, unconditional open-mindedness, and a willingness to pee in your pants from the insane stories that remind us of what it's like to be an active addiction. Dave, and we all know the story of your co-creator, Chris, and that was a disaster, and we can talk about it. But you can get it anyway at TuneIn. Wait a second. Gosh darn the way this thing jumps around. Tune in and turn on Dopey, and you'll hear guests like Mark Maron, Margaret Cho, Jamie Lee Curtis, Killer Mike. Good job, man. And Dopey is without doubt an amazing, amazing place for addicts to go and people to learn about the disease of addiction. We are talking, Dopey, Dave, a little bit about younger drug addicts and how different they are and how the trouble Bob's had reaching them.
Well, it's just,
it's got to be very difficult.
Yeah, the trouble isn't them. The trouble is me. They're the new generation of addicts. Let me just say this, Dave. Yeah. They are 70% of the inpatient patients in treatment for drug and alcohol.
Oh, is that true?
70% are millennials. So if you don't know how to talk to millennials, you should get the F out of the business.
To be fair, the rest of the adults are all out on the streets. Because, there's nothing to move them back towards treatment, right? The Prop 47 in California, anyway, they're all on the streets.
Well, and then at 26, you go off to your parents' insurance.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when they headed for the streets.
So, but Dave has a huge millennial following. And I wondered, like, Dave, when you get on your recovery high horse, which you've known to do, what's the reaction of the Dopey Nation? What's the reaction to it?
It's interesting. I'm realizing this week was a real recovery kind of episode. It was my friend and she celebrated 4 years and we were talking a lot of God stuff and a lot of this and a lot of that. And people are going for it now. I think my new philosophy is kind of like your old philosophy, which is like, try to have a good time being sober. And if you can't, I hope you survive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. So the people who are into it are just kind of hanging out and are into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's a lot of Dopey Nation that are high. But wait a minute. There's a lot of Dopey Nation that's high, that hates rehabs, hates psychobabble. Think, you know, what's their take on it?
Can you hear me, Bob?
Yeah, I can hear you.
We hear you.
Bob, can you hear me?
Yeah. We hear you. We hear you.
Okay, you guys are going to... Are you ready? Are you ready for this? You're not going to like this. But I've created... I'm in the process of creating my own bullshit movement. Okay, you listening?
Okay, Dave, hold it. Yeah. Hold it. I got to take a break.
Yeah, no, we're going to get back to this in a second.
The entire movement cannot be described in a
minute. Is he the leader?
I hope not. But he may be appointing you, Bob. That may be what's happening.
Oh, my God. I might be a leader.
All right, so we're going to take a break.
Okay.
I have more business to take care of, which... I will tell you that today we're also taking calls till around 4 o'clock. Then we'll pick up again at 4:30 this Pacific time. We'll follow with a new Ask Dr. Drew show. Ginger Gonzaga will be here with me again. So after This Life is Over, we'll be dropping all calls, and we apologize if we couldn't get to you on this queue. However, you have the option to text your question again to the same number, and when you call in, you'll get back in the queue. This just helps our screeners to see your questions and just be less confusing. So again, as soon as the next show launches at 4:30 Pacific, and you still want to ask the question during the next show, text us at the end of this broadcast, which will end in about a half an hour, text us at the end of the podcast at 9842 Dr. Drew, and we'll try to notify you as soon as the next show begins so you can call back. We appreciate your patience. We hopefully this system works for you, and we appreciate it. Appreciate you listening and being a part of this. At Rehab Bob Forrest is where you can follow Bob. And, of course, the Don't Die podcast. And then Dopey Dave and the Dopey podcast. We'll be back with him in just a second. We'll be right back with you. Hey, I just want to take a second to tell you about our friends at Social CBD. I get asked a lot about CBD products. Everyone's heard about it. But thanks to the variety of claims being made, it can be difficult to answer these things with certainty. We don't have the clinical science yet. Luckily, I've connected with an Oregon-based company that has all about high-quality ingredients and manufacturing. Not hype. They were previously called Select CBD, but they've just relaunched their brand as Social CBD. Social CBD focuses on broad spectrum oil, something else you might have heard about, but also confusing. So let me tell you about that. Hemp has over 60 non-psychoactive cannabinoids. CBD is one of them. Broad spectrum oil goes beyond CBD isolates and contains additional active compounds that work together to create what's known as the entourage effect. This can be effectively delivering more calming and relaxing effects for, that's what many people, of course, are looking for. Social CBD's broad-spectrum oils contain zero THC, no high, no rewarding effects, none of those risks. They are available as great-tasting tinctures and flavors like vanilla mint, pomegranate tea, Meyer lemon. Simply drop it under your tongue for maximum effect. Social CBD products available in a range of formulations, each of which is clearly described, so you can make an informed decision without all the promises that appear to be and often are too good to be true. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/socialCBD. That's my website, drdrew.com/SOCIALCBD. For a limited time, you save 20% at checkout with the code DRDREW. Check it out. Now back to the show. We are back.
Social CBD. I got some questions about that.
All right, hold on a second. We got to get back to Dave.
Yeah, we got to get the cult leader thing going.
Yeah. For some reason, I can't get him. Oh, there he is over here.
Dave?
Dave, do I have you back? Talk. Hang on. This is all Dave new technology. There? There we are. Dave.
Doctor?
Hey, buddy.
Okay.
Doctor? Bob? Are you guys there?
I'm here. We're waiting and you know, we're eager to hear
this new movement.
Listen, I was not sure if I was going to tell you guys about it because I figured you'd, like, laugh me off the show.
No.
And I figured, like, I didn't want that to happen. But this is the thing, okay? When Chris and I started doing the show, it was supposed to be a dumb show about dumb fucking stories that happened to us. And that worked. And then all of a sudden, I knew it was irresponsible, so I wanted to talk recovery. So we talked some recovery. And then, as everybody knows, Chris died, and it got depressing for a bit.
And then I kind of just kicked it back into the old way, which was a bunch of drug stories, but I had to include recovery. And I get all of these emails from people who say they got into recovery through dopey. Okay.
Right. Okay.
And I don't have any statistics. I just have beautiful, beautiful kind of testimonials of people that never would go to a meeting, never got any time together. And all of a sudden there's this handful of people who have a year, who have 6 months, who have a month. And I was like, what the fuck is this? So I decided I was going to set up a reservation where people can move out and have sex with me and give me Rolls Royces. So it's starting now, the dopey cult in upstate New York. And if you have, no, I'm just kidding. The whole thing is happened. Just, I call it the alt recovery movement.
Okay.
Is what I call it, which is bullshit. It's just any way that you can, I just have to say that my life is more fun like this than it was getting high. And I think a lot of people are scared to get sober. They're scared. And I think they're comforted by the vibe of dopey. And I think it's like that vibe is available, you know, from yourself, you know. And I don't, the movement is incredibly loose. It's just get into recovery however you can and let the fruits of your labor, you know, service you. Enjoy it. Enjoy yourself.
I think that is generally...
That's it.
Yeah, I think that is generally the way people are approaching.
That's what's happening.
Yeah, I think it's what's happening, which is whatever works for you. So, and the reality is there are lots of options, right? There is there's medically assisted treatment. There are CBT therapies. There's motivational enhancement therapies. People are getting sober through your friend, the Buddhist, that whole movement?
The refuge recovery.
Refuge recovery. I mean, there's all kinds of ways. Yeah, they all end up doing kind of the same thing. But it has to be yours and speak to you, and that's great.
But it's community. The one thing that it is community. And what was AA or NA or what are AA or NA is community.
It's fellowship, one human helping another. Absolutely. It's interpersonal disease with an interpersonal solution. However we do that, God bless you. Let's just get it done.
That's now, perfect.
But the scalability and the problem with the magnitude of the problem, I am now capitulated to medication-assisted treatment is something we got to do. Because full recovery is just not an option. The flourishing that I got interested in and why I got interested in recovery, it's not for everybody. It just isn't.
No, it doesn't fit the mindset anymore. Right? So,
but does that even matter, though? I mean, all that really matters is that whoever is going to get it gets it. And then... You know what I mean? You can't do anything about anybody else.
It's exactly, you know, right. I mean? The rest, the rest should not die. That's the point.
And there shouldn't be so many of them that you're not acknowledging that it was 3% of the population, Dave, when that theory was so accepted. It's now 20% of the population. You can't have, if 1 out of 10 get sober and you have 2 million addicts, you can't have 900,000 addicts dying.
Right. That's exactly
you have to have a solution for them.
That's right.
Is an alternative to 12 steps, really, because 12 step thing is not, you know, I'm assuming a lot of your dopey listeners that are searching out new ways to find thriving are not going to 12 step meetings.
Some are, and some aren't. I mean, I do. But Bob, let me ask you this. Are you interested in starting a cult with me?
Drew kind of knew that you wanted me. This is not the first time I've been offered to be a cult leader, by the way.
Dave, don't do it.
I'm retired. I sit and listen to music.
No, it's funny.
I'm too old to be a cult leader.
Can we bring music in?
Don't you have to be in your 40s to be a cult leader?
That's really funny. You have to wear white.
I'm 45, Bob.
I know, you're the perfect age.
Dave, we are concluding our conversation here. It's always great. I'll see you in New York, all right?
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
We'll get on that podcast with Flea, I promise you.
See you soon.
Wait. Hold on.
I can't. I dropped you. Too late. He wants to give you crap about the...
I have a really
interesting call here I want to get to. The next level, the part of our conversation needs to be about homelessness, because that's where a lot of the drug addicts are that are so irretrievable right now. Brian, are you there? Brian?
Yeah.
Hey. Good question. Go ahead.
What's your question?
Well, first off, Well, I just wanted to say shout out to you and Bob and Dave. I've been a big fan of Dopey Nation for a long time.
There you go.
Dopey's awesome.
And Dave actually personally called me and kind of helped me get into rehab, and I'm in there right now. I've been there for 6 months. So,
good for you, man.
Before all, I just want to say thank you, Dave.
Awesome.
He's listening. He's not online anymore. He wanted to talk about Flea, and I dropped him.
Oh, he just left?
Yeah. It's all right, though. He's listening.
Well,
are you going to be the first member of his cult?
No. He has a good question. Go ahead. Ask that question.
Okay, I already hear the question.
Basically, I kind of wrote it. Do you think there's a fine balance between harm reduction and judicial punishment that needs to be calibrated with society in order to help suffering addicts, but at the same time, holding them accountable?
I'm putting you back in the queue.
It's a big question that Bob and I are going to chew on right now, right? Right? So
yeah, I mean,
here we are. We live. I'm getting other calls.
I've been talking about this for 5, 10 years.
Hang on a second. I am muting everybody because I'm getting every call in the world in my head. So here we are in the utopia that is California. We have Prop 47, Prop 57, maybe 109.
Oh, it's not just in California, where they don't arrest drug addicts anymore.
Right. So we don't take legal action against drug addicts. We don't encourage them to treat. We don't leverage them into treatment. This is what's his name's plan? The guy that wrote that book about the rats and the perfect utopia. His name is not coming to me.
They need PlayPals and all that kind of stuff.
So now we've done this experiment, and now people are dying at the rate of 3 a day.
Johann Hari.
3 a day. I'm putting everybody. Johann Hari, thank you very much. Whoever said that, exactly who I'm talking about. But I'm having to mute everybody, have a little technical problem. But yes, Johann Hari. And now people are dying at the rate of 3 a day. So it's not okay. It doesn't work. It's a progressive disease. When I was arguing with him, I forgot to point out that this is a progressive problem, and we have to deal with it accordingly. It can be temporarily dealt with all kinds of leniency. Fine. It shouldn't be in the legal system. I don't believe it should be in the justice system, except to encourage people over to treatment.
Well,
or to now medication-assisted treatment.
Yeah, but this gets back to what I'm talking about. Things don't register. So it registered with me when I was facing 3 years in prison. Yep. It registered with me.
Yeah.
It does not register with 27-year-olds whose parents have rescued them from every problem that has ever existed in their life,
right,
including teachers who didn't understand them when they were in third grade,
right.
All the way down the line. So I believe the prison system, both in Nevada, Arizona, California, and Washington, those are the four states I've worked alternative sentencing in, they've kind of just given up. They have drug courts.
They've given up,
They've kind of just given up. And because the cost to incarcerate all these drug addicts...
They shouldn't be incarcerated, to be fair. We agree they shouldn't be
But you have to be threatened with incarceration.
Right. That's right. No, that's right. There has to be
it
a sort
the
of
threat.
Damage.
And so now they're not going to. So I can give you examples where I had a client who was in possession of heroin high. His keys in the ignition of his car passed out by the side of the road. The cops called his parents to come and pick him up.
Right.
Heroin. So
that's typical now. So that's the world we live in. That's it. So we are sort of in agreement that there should not be they should not be in the justice system. They should be an ancillary system of some type. Same with the mental health patients, right? They shouldn't be in prison. They should not be in prison.
No, but you have to find what is going to motivate them.
I understand.
Prison motivates drug addicts, I hate to tell you.
I got it.
Not all of them, obviously, because 60, 70% of the population is addicts.
And then Brian's question was harm reduction versus criminal justice, right?
Well, see, I believe you guys don't really, you're not out there on the streets. I got out of the rehab and out into the streets.
Yeah.
The streets are not going to buy Suboxone. They don't like Suboxone. That's a government plan that's not going to work on the streets.
But how about if people said you can't just sit on the street and you've got to go somewhere, and by the way, we'll give you Suboxone. They would take that.
No, they'd rather just... There's so many drugs now. Everyone is a polysubstance abuser.
Well,
there's no opioid addicts anymore.
It's meth heroin. Meth heroin.
Pot is nothing anymore.
I know.
Pot is like milk.
Yeah.
Benzos constantly.
Yeah.
Synthetic drugs that they get that's marijuana. I've been down there in downtown. They like take this drug and they say what it is and I look at it. I don't even know.
Cat or something.
Cat or synthetic marijuana looking stuff. stuff and cigarettes that are dipped in shit. People are, it's not like the Suboxone model that our governor wants to roll out and the federal government wants to roll out, and maybe you do want to roll out.
I think it will help.
The addict population is not from 1964, like sign up for methadone and go there every day. I bet you everything that they're not going to go to the clinic every day like I did. They're not going to.
No, I know.
They're not going to.
I understand.
So then you're going to have to give them a week's dose.
Yes, yeah.
They're going to sell it to get that synthetic drugs and whatever. But I mean, I'm up for it to see how many of the 900,000 it can get out of there. If it's even another 10%, it's worth it.
Okay.
But that it's going to be a, what do you say, panacea of 900,000 addicts?
No, it's not. But if you started doing more comprehensive care on these patients, you would get somewhere.
A 24-year-old their drug of choice? They don't know.
I know. I know it's polydrug. I know. Let me get, we got Patrick from Don't Die Wisconsin. Let's get him on.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's gonna be governor of Wisconsin, I predict, someday.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. We're gonna have a friend in the government.
I have to unmute it. Hang, it won't come
Patrick,
up.
Patrick, where are you?
There we are. Now,
are you there? Back.
There we are. Patrick?
Hello, Doc. Hey, Bob. How are you?
Hey,
I want to make a prediction right now. I predict in 2028, Kanye West will be president of the United States, and Patrick will be governor of Wisconsin. Crazier things have happened. How are you
For
doing?
Sure.
I saw you all dressed up at some big government function the other night on Instagram. What was that about?
That wasn't a government function. That was the organization, the nonprofit I work for. We are currently in a motion to build a new treatment center. And it's
that sounds like government to me,
so,
brother. You're going to be a politician someday. Admit it.
Well, my brother is a mayor, and my other brother is a judge, so I think it's in my genes.
There you go.
Maybe.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But
right, I can change from the top.
But he grew a mustache and he was wearing a fancy suit.
So Patrick, could you hear what we were talking about before you got on the air?
Oh, he knows all about this. It works in Wisconsin because there's only like 400,000 people there.
Yeah.
Everything that we talk about on here works in Wisconsin. It's not going to work in California. That's the other thing that we need to accept. Right? They have great harm reduction programs.
Not if people are just loose on the streets.
Well, it's also cold in the winter.
They have to go somewhere. That's the point. Loose on the streets, you can't.
Do you think that why you guys are so successful with every program you roll out is because of the lower population numbers and it's cold 9 months out of the year? I mean, how much homeless problem do you have, really?
For sure. I mean, yes, you are correct. I don't think it's as simple, but it does definitely play in our favor. So when it gets cold, the shelters open up, and, you know, it's a smaller population. So, Bob, I've heard you talk a lot about, since we're smaller, it's not like we're not moving an aircraft carrier, right? So we can make changes pretty quickly. So an example would be, they just did a big thing with the fentanyl test strips for IV injection users. So in the harm reduction model with the exchanges, they were handing out the fentanyl test strips. We just got back some numbers on that, which are pretty promising. They're showing like 50% of the people that tested their stuff and saw a positive for fentanyl either used less or sipped or, you know, pushed slower or used less. Some even got rid of the stuff. So, you know, I'm a hardcore abstinent personal guy,
right?
But I'm also a hardcore, harm reductionist because too many of my friends have died and I don't think drug users deserve to die.
Right.
You get it. So when I was there with them, that was a year ago, they were giving out fentanyl testing strips and the kids used it.
Yeah, I know. I know.
That's not going to happen in L.A.
If it helps them, they might start looking for fentanyl. We're testing for it. But
did anybody? Yeah, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Drew does know drug addicts, Patrick.
Yeah.
Was there any examples in the surveys where people used it to make sure that there was fentanyl in their dope?
To seek it?
You guys stole my highlight. So one of the numbers, it was a really small population because it was the first rollout. But there were a couple tests where earlier I said people threw it out because they it's off fentanyl. There were a couple tests where people threw it out because they didn't see fentanyl.
Right.
So
I know drug addicts.
That's an outlier. You don't have to. Claim that.
I know drug addicts. Yeah. So, but I think we are all on the same page, right?
We need new solutions and a multiplicity of solutions.
Correct. We need leverage. The status quo is going to, even with MAT, is going to end in more deaths.
But I think the weather is the leverage in Wisconsin. Milwaukee's an amazing town, but you can't be on the streets in Milwaukee from like right now, right, Patrick, from September to like February. You can't be on the streets at all, even if you're cover, you know what I mean? Can you? 4 months out of the year, you have to go somewhere.
No, I mean, last year, we lost some of our homeless population to freezing to death.
Oh,
like,
my
literally
God.
Freezing to death.
Oh, but hang on a second.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you that Los Angeles loses more to exposure than any other place. Actual numbers.
Well, from pneumonia that?
Just the cold. It's not Wisconsin cold. You can't tolerate that for an hour. But the people think they're okay, they're loaded, they lay out, and then they die of exposure. Happens here a lot. But it's not as motivating as it is in Wisconsin, where people have to go
indoors.
Yeah,
if it's coming in on the end of August, I bet people become more willing to go to rehab in Milwaukee.
But this is the point. We need leverage. We need to get people off the streets and into something. But anyway, Patrick, we got to wrap it up. I appreciate you calling, man. Any last thoughts?
No, I mean, I can send you the numbers and the fentanyl strips, and I would love, Dr. Drew, for you to talk about the myth of touching fentanyl, cops are overdosing. I think it's a lot like the AIDS epidemic and sitting on a toilet gives you AIDS. I'm really scared that people aren't going to Narcan people or help people fearing that they're going to overdose, and it's just flat out bullshit.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll respect it.
What is the myth?
There's a myth that people, by even touching enough fentanyl, it'll go through their skin or get into their eye or something.
Oh, right.
So, you know,
that's just a challenge. You know, that's local news stories.
It's local news stuff. It's cops getting scared that they might got exposed to something, and I don't blame them for getting checked, but yes, use your Narcan, period. Don't worry about it. All right, Patrick, thank you so much.
See you later.
Thanks,
talk to you soon.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bob. All right, buddy.
Wow.
So, the last few
you learn something new every day. Like, there's a myth that you shouldn't Narcan someone because you'll overdose yourself.
There's a myth that if you touch too much of the product that they're involved with, that you'll
listen. The drug addicts you're meeting on the streets don't have any product left. They just did it all.
I know.
I can guarantee you that.
Let's talk to the last remaining minutes about the homeless situation per se. What percentage of people out there are drug addicts?
I would say 50%.
What are the other 50%?
30% are the same population that's been out there. If the VA would step up, you'd be amazed at how many veterans are on the streets. It's an abomination to this nation.
And what do they have? What is the condition that they have?
They're PTSD. They have addiction.
Okay, so they're back in the addiction group. What diagnoses are out on the street? We have a whole bunch of drug addicts. And I think 50% is very conservative.
Schizoid, schizophrenia.
Okay, chronic psychotic disorders. Where are all the schizophrenics in the country?
Los Angeles. I was just at McDonald's on Figueroa, was one.
Then uncontrolled bipolar of various types and other psychotic disorders. It is unconscionable, Bob, that we leave these people on the streets. They're all treatable. These are treatable conditions that are progressive, that often end in demise. Right. And if you treat them early and aggressively, people can do very, very well with them. And if you don't treat them, they become irretrievable. Why can't we talk about what's going on here?
Because we're living in a fantasy of what America is.
Which is
if you have economic success, money is all that matters. I talk in one of the talks that I give about the change in American culture, right? Boyski, I think his name was, in the Milken thing. Mm-hmm. He was this insider trader guy who claimed and made this statement that greed is good.
Right.
In 1985 or 86, America almost threw up. They said, no, that's disgusting. There was a rebellion against him. He was destroyed. Mm-hmm. You say greed is good now, people go, yeah, it is good. It is. Kanye West, the Kardashians, all this nonsense of people idolize. Mm-hmm. It's examples of gauche materialism. We idolize people who are who represent gaucheness.
Okay.
There's no decorum in our society. There's not respect for lifelong diplomats.
You are an old man.
I am an old man. Right?
Let's get this. I'm going to get this one more call in. I'm getting good at using this system here. William, are you on?
William?
Yes, hello.
Hi, William.
Yes. How are you, doctor?
We got about a minute or two, so have at it.
Yeah, so this is going to be hard in a minute, but I just wanted to address the questions about Suboxone for use with chronic pain management.
Yeah.
Right.
Just a couple of quick things, given the short period of time. First of all, I've been a patient advocate for years now. I deal with both addicts and chronic pain patients. There's a huge percentage of the chronic pain community who do not get success using Suboxone. I'm not saying
what about methadone?
What about
methadone?
I'm sorry?
What about methadone?
What's that?
What about methadone?
I see people who get better results on methadone.
Right, me too.
So percentage-wise, more people get better results on methadone than they do Suboxone. I'm not saying rule either out. I'm saying whatever is effective for the person, go for it.
Right.
However, the big thing about Suboxone is for patients who have conditions where they may end up requiring surgery so emergency surgery.
Yeah.
Getting those people through surgery while they have Suboxone in the system but now need traditional opioid treatment is a very complex thing.
Have you treated that?
Substance abuse and health.
Have you been actually in the hospital? Have you actually been in a hospital when that's happening?
I have been. Yes, I have been in there with patients who have been going through that.
So my experience is, my experience with that is that it's not that complicated, but doctors don't understand how to do it. And so let me guess,
you would wait 12 hours.
It's a lot less fancy than you'd think. But go ahead, William, you go ahead.
Well, my experience is from hospital to hospital, to a certain extent, you're right. They have varying degrees or varying ways of approaching this.
Yeah.
SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, recommends when you have planned surgery, you go through a 2 to 4 week tapering before you have surgery. For same day surgery, every hospital has their own approach based on just what knowledge they have.
Yeah.
But my point is, for the patient though, dealing with this, it can be a horrific experience because obviously you folks know if you're too quickly weaned off of Suboxone,
terrible.
You're going to go through terrible withdrawal. Yeah,
Suboxone's awful withdrawal.
And how?
So
yeah,
we got to wrap it up.
How soon?
We got to wrap it up. But this is kind of a technical.
What's that?
This is kind of a technical conversation about how to treat the Suboxone patient with opiates. Let me just say, there were some recent publications with some very specific directions that make it very simple, and the doctor should look at the latest publication. I think it was the New England Journal, if I remember right. But the point was you were going to make was that Suboxone is highly stigmatized, and I'm not sure stigma is the right word. It says confusion about it. Bob and I are not advocates for it, but because we wanted to see people fully recover.
I'm just a realist.
Yeah, but we're a realist, and we want people to die. So. Has a role.
Listen, you've had two administrations from both sides of the aisle say no more OxyContin. So it's not going to come back. You have to find alternatives.
Suboxone seems like one solution
for some part of the population. Methadone has been being used for pain management for 50 years.
I know I've seen disasters from that. I'm way less enthusiastic. Oh my God.
If we're looking at a multiplicity of solutions for addiction, look for it for pain too.
Yeah, Bob. No.
But the problem is that just in dealing with patients, we need to treat every patient on a patient by patient basis.
That's right.
They're not going to. I mean, they're not going to.
That's right.
There's too much demonization of opioids now. You're not going to be able to go back, so we need to go forward. That's the thing that someday, I hope, I'm telling you, my best friend was in agonizing pain. I was screaming at the nurses.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
I know.
But they're not going to do it. And both sides of the aisle, all of Washington is locked up. The drug companies who produce the opioids are bankrupt. Mm-hmm. So where do you think that we're going to go? It's never going to go back to 2004. We have to figure out solutions for people who are in pain now. right? And I turned to a private doctor. Yeah. I said, you know, as soon as you get out of there, you need to call this doctor.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And brave, courageous doctors will stand up and do the right thing.
That's exactly right. They know what they're doing.
They get notes from the government.
I get them all the time. This is me. Me. I get notes from the government. Think about that. So somebody
what doctor like you prescribed how much opioids to what patient?
Imagine you're
that
a doctor who really doesn't understand addiction and you're getting notes from the government. It's scary. I know what I'm doing and I get notes from the government. So
compare it to doctors in your zip code, correct?
There's many ways to get on your case.
Well, explain a couple because the public
one
needs
is you're
to
out
know.
Of, you're out of line with your peers. Is yes. One of them. The other is stop. The insurance company is on your. The insurance companies will tell you to stop.
Okay.
Then the Department of Mental Health will tell you to shut up.
So we are not going back to 2004.
No. We got to wrap this thing up. We got to wrap up.
But I hope that people in real pain can find solutions. And CBD might be something.
CBD
methadone
some
is something.
People.
Suboxone, Subutex.
Stop with the methadone. Trust me on that. Trust
me. Well, I think some people in like the Midwest have been on it forever for pain management anyway.
That's fine. That's a drug you don't want to come off. So, but
260 milligrams.
Oh, Jesus.
How could you get that high?
I don't know. We got to wrap up, buddy. Where do you want people to find you?
I want them to come to my event on December 8th in Hollywood. It's a Narcan training and Narcan group. We're going to talk about addicts. You know, giving an addict Narcan training who uses by themselves is not really that effective.
No,
it may make me feel good to give it to them.
No.
But we're going to talk about directly to the addict. Some play music. Felony Sponsors reuniting to play my band.
Okay.
And it's on December 8th in Hollywood. You can go to Rehab Bob and look it up. And
There it is. How about that? Free
Perfect.
Narcan, free tacos, music special guest giveaways.
Well, look at it. It's free Narcan and tacos and music, but it looks like free Narcan tacos.
Yes. Well, that'd be an interesting new
Narcan
solution
tacos.
To the problem. And a reminder for everyone on the phone, hang on. We are taking calls until, what time is it now?
It's like 4 o'clock.
Okay. We're going to pick up again at 4:30 with a new Ask Dr. Drew show with Ginger Gonzaga. After we wrap up here in just a few seconds, we'll be dropping all calls. I apologize to those of you on hold, but if you do have the option to text your questions again as soon as the lines close, text to the same number, cut and paste the original one, and when you call in again, you'll get back in the queue. It helps our screener to see your questions in advance, and we'll get you right back where you belong here and get to those questions as quickly as possible. In the next show, once again, as soon as this show launches at 4:30, and if you still want to ask questions during that show, text us. Is that the number they text, the 9842-DR? Okay, text there, 9842-DR. We'll notify you as soon as the next show begins. Thank you for the patience. Thank you. We hope this all works out. We hope you guys are getting something out of this. And we're sorry for
the technical stuff. What did we learn today? Dave is going to be a cult leader, and Patrick's going to be governor of Wisconsin.
We learned that, but we also learned that things are evolving and changing and
more solutions.
And you and I, you particularly have softened your position. I was always kind of open to the possibility of these things because I could tell we had to do something. But now it's gone so far down. So everyone is so far, so close to dying that if we don't do something and do something aggressive, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of dead.
Yeah, there's
it'll be lots.
There's
of dead.
More than the 400,000 they're saying.
Yeah,
I know that.
I agree. So, Bob, good to see you, man. Thank
good
you
to be here.
And check us out
fancy
next time.
Fancy TV station.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Dr. Drew here, and this is just a reminder that the discussions here are not a substitute for medical care or medical evaluation. This is purely for entertainment and education. We hope you learned something, but see your doctor, get proper medical care.